There's a guy who used to call it Heinz 57. It's like a mutt. It's like a mutt running down the street. You don't know what it came from. So anyhow, this is what we're going to talk about. Those kind of meetings. We're sitting around making each other sick. And I'm talking about literally and figuratively. We're sitting there spreading the disease and not the recovery from alcoholism. Now you say, how can that happen? Well, there are probably a few reasons why the program that you hear in the fellowship is not the program in our book. A lot of us don't know. And I get it. And believe me, I get it. I understand that. But here's how it had to have happened. First, in the beginning, they had to depend on real recovery because there was no 90 meetings in 90 days. There was three meetings. One in Akron, one in Cleveland, one in Brooklyn. You couldn't go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So all that crap that we're throwing around was impossible. They depended on real recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? So obviously, they read the book, did the deal, and they started groups called Alcoholics Anonymous. But in the beginning, like I said, the program in the fellowship was the same as the program in the book. Then as the fellowship grew in numbers, we discovered the great support that we have. And there's a lot of power in this room. Together, my God, you know what we can do collectively? A whole lot more than we can do individually. There's a lot of great power in this room. They discovered the power of the support group. And then they started wondering about the power of this vital spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, and the directions of this recipe for recovery. So unfortunately, we started transmitting the message and it got garbled. That's one of the reasons that they wrote this book. We found out that obviously we could stay dry, not sober, on the fellowship, not recovery, okay? On the fellowship alone, not using the program. And let's face it, we all like to take the easier, softer way. We all have written this book or written some things out. You understand I'm different. They should change that. Let's face it. Call a spade a spade. But I got news for you. This program, called Alcoholics Anonymous, this book, is not like Burger King. You can't have it your own way. You can, but you can have a beer with it too, or whatever you like to drink. And this book, having it our own way, isn't like that other food chain where I'm loving it. It don't work that way. You're going to be hating it, I guarantee you. You do the deal that sometimes it's going to be uncomfortable. No pain, no gain. And I mean, that's a spiritual axiom on that. So anyhow, how that started happening, they probably started asking themselves, do I got to turn all of my will and my life over to the care and direction of God? Maybe I just turn over the drinking and I can keep my sex, my money, and my power, my clothes, and all that, my motorcycle, all that good stuff. And started saying, yeah, you can do whatever you want. And then they started thinking, do I have to tell all of my life story to another human being? I know it. God knows it. Why do I got to tell somebody else? Or it started taking the easier, softer way. Do I got to make amends to all of those people? And you can see how it started getting watered down, watered down, watered down. And none of us in this room watered down our whiskey. And I ain't going to water down this because it's a matter of life and death. And we're talking about free and freedom. Okay, so now, and here's what really got us going, and I'm a product of this treatment center started. In fact, treatment worked so good I went three times. Okay, yeah, so I am not against treatment. Don't get me wrong. But treatment's treatment. It's not Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
Okay? So, when, including me, yes, came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I brought with me? Besides alcoholism, I brought a lot of the RR, rehab rubric. So here's what you start hearing. You psychobabble and all that stuff. It's a program that you'll hear in the fellowship. And here's some of the stuff that you'll hear. We started hearing from the treatment, kind of stuff like this, about triggers. What? That's on my pistol, and I know what I do with a trigger. That's a trigger. I hear that. Start talking about dysfunctional. What? I remember I said that to an old-timer, and he said, wait a minute, dude. If you come from a dysfunctional family, it's because of you. You are the dysfunction. The other one said disc, and the other one said, yeah. So the dysfunctional is right here. They started talking about meaningful relationships. What the hell? Okay. And then they started talking about dysfunctional sex. Now, I got news for you. If you're having sex with an alcoholic, it's dysfunctional. So go talk to your sponsor about that. I love that. And then they started talking about inner child. What? Okay. And then back when I came in, they were running around with teddy bears and blankets. And oh, my God, yeah, you guys missed it if you weren't around. And then, of course, they talk about being a victim. That book doesn't talk about that. Victims stay sick. Victims never get better. Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're a victim, will turn you into a victor. And then here's another one. They talk about codependent. That's something I used to cheat on my taxes. Well, I don't know what you guys about that. I'd make up people that weren't, and I'd say they were my kids. There's another one. Chemically dependent. Well, I've had a lot of cars that were, and maybe my lawn is with a fertilizer. What the hell is this? And another one, I like this too. Cross-addicted. What? I said that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know what the old-timer said? I love him. He said, cross-addicted. He said, get off the cross, dude. We need the wood. And I said, okay, I never said that again. So then we had the ability or the audacity to talk about enablers. This book doesn't talk about that. That's not Alcoholics Anonymous. That's whatever it is. Talks about scapegoats. Talks about heroes, caretakers, self-help. My therapist said this. My psychiatrist said that. My counselor said that. That's not what it says. How about what your sponsor says on page 59? Let's start talking that in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, slowly the program that you hear in the fellowship is not the program in our book. Therefore, this is what's happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. We've turned AA into a society who measures their success on dry time, the last time we took our drink. And that's real important. And don't, I'm not discrediting that at all. But what we don't measure is our recovery. In other words, we measure our success on quantity of time rather than quality of recovery. I talk about this all the time. Don't count your time. Make your time count. I'm going to read something that says it all. Now, you probably want to look at this real carefully, and that's what these squares are here. Now, some of you that have been here before, I don't know how you're doing with this, but I'm going to give you a refresher course. This looks like, and this was it was painful to do this, by the way. Yes, I brought a yardstick anyhow. And this looks like a scorecard, and you are correct. This is called AA Bullshit Bingo. Here's what it is. Do you keep falling asleep in meetings? Okay, I see some sleepers in here. What about those long and boring drinking stories? Tired of that same old slogan babble of members who continue to deal with the same problem for the same year, same defects, and same painful relationship for years? Here's a way to change it now. Come on. Okay. Number one, instructions. You want to write this. Before or during your next meeting, prepare yourself drawing a square. That's what this is, a square. Okay. I found out 5x5 is a good size. Divide that card in two columns, 5 across, 5 down. That will give you 25 inches blocks. Instruction number two after you have your card. Write down one of the following word phrases in each block. Codependent, enabler, denial, triggers, issues, inner child, living amends, meaningful relationship, I'm stuck on step whatever, couldn't find a meeting, my sponsor's been out of town, can't change, won't change, yeah, but, oh, the pain, misunderstood, never, searching, as for the answers, I'm a gonna, okay, that's always a good one, I've been thinking, I know what I need to do, but, dysfunctional, I heard, rage, this is one of my favorite ones, I don't know much about this, but, and it goes on like that, so anyhow, so, check off the appropriate block when you hear those phrases that we just gave. Okay, now, when you get 5 blocks, and this is how you play bingo, I don't know if you've ever done that, you can win a couple ways. If you have 5 blocks this way, you're a winner. If you have 5 blocks this way, you're a winner. And also, you can win 5 blocks this way. So, as it's going, when you check the appropriate block, when you get 5 horizontally, vertically, or diagonally, which we just put up there, you stand up and shout, Bullshit! Okay, so. Okay. Now, I've got a distinct advantage on most of you. I was given this as a gift. I would never, I don't say this, and I don't say, I use this sparingly. As you can see on there, what it says is, it says bullshit on there. So now, when I'm playing bingo, and I hear it, and I get it, listen. Yeah. Bullshit detected, and goes on. Okay, last one. Okay, so now. I'll let you touch that afterwards. And okay, so now. All right. Now, if you think this doesn't work, here's some real testimony from this. This comes from somebody in Atlanta. He says, his name's Adam, by the way. And it says, I've been in the meeting for only 5 minutes when I won. Boy, that was a quickie. This guy from Tampa, by the name of Dave, says, my attention span at meetings has improved dramatically. Okay, he wants to win. This guy from New York City says, what a gas. Meetings will never be the same for me after my first win. Okay, this guy from Denver says, the atmosphere was tense in the last gratitude meeting as 14 of us waited for the fifth box. And the last but not least, this guy from Miami says, the speaker was stunned as 8 of us screamed out, bullshit, for the third time in 20 minutes. So now, we laugh about it, but seriously now, we see the difference in Alcoholics Anonymous versus what's going around in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program. I want to bring something real quick, and then, yeah, we're ready to roll. Now, we're going to start with the first paragraph of the first foreword, and we're going to jump over to the foreword of the second edition. The foreword of the first edition, first paragraph, we talked about the word we. Obviously, we talked about that being one of the most powerful words in the book. It's used like 1,154 times. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seamless, hopeless state of mind and body. Need to clarify that. When this was written, there were only 94 people. There were 22 in Akron, 29 in New York, and 43 in Cleveland. Three groups. Only 94 people, and Bill rounded up to 100. Because obviously, 100 sounds a lot better than 94. But here's the whole premise of this. Recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And it goes on to say, for them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we're sure our way of living has its advantages for all. I want to go to the forward to the second edition. And it says, forward to the second edition. And it says, figures given in this forward describe the fellowship as it was in 1955. Now, aren't we glad we know what the difference between the program and the fellowship are now? Because I couldn't even get in to the forward to the second edition here, or forward to the second edition without making that distinction. Listen to what he says to us right out of the gate. Since the original forward to this book was written in 1939, a wholesale miracle has taken place. I want to stop right there. What is a miracle? I'm glad you asked that question too, because I thought it was. A miracle, according to Webster's, is an event or an action that apparently contradicts known scientific laws or a remarkable thing. He used that word miracle on page 11, 57, 85, 124, 128, and 151. It must be a pretty important word. He used the word miraculous three times, page 25, 50, and 55. And he used the word miracles, plural, on page 153, 135, and 11. Absolutely fascinating. And he says the wholesale miracle has taken place. It says, our earliest printing voiced the hope that every alcoholic who journeys will find the fellowship, see where we're going, so glad, of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination. Already continues the early text, twos and threes and fives have sprung up in other communities. 16 years have lapsed between our first printing of this book and the presentation in 1955 of our second edition. In that brief space, Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship that is, not the program or the book, has mushroomed into nearly 6,000 groups whose 6,000 groups whose membership is far above 150,000 recovered, not recovering, not dry, recovered. And stay with me, I promise you, there's a page on here. I will show you what a recovered alcoholic is according to Alcoholics Anonymous. Not recovering. Okay. And it says, groups can be found, are to be found east of the United States and all provinces of Canada as flourishing communities in British Isles, Scandinavian countries, South Africa, South America, Mexico, Alaska, Australia, and Hawaii. All told, promising beginnings have been made in some 50 foreign countries and U.S. possessions. Some are just taking shape in Asia. Many of our friends encouraged by saying this is but a beginning, only the augury of a much larger future ahead. An augury is an omen or an indication. I had to use that Webster's for that word. I did. Okay. I do this thing up in Cleveland a different time of year, and this always makes them nervous when I read this part of it because there's some debate where Alcoholics Anonymous started, but don't shoot the messenger. It's right here what it says here. It says the spark that was the flare into the first AA group was struck at Akron, Ohio in June 1935 during a talk between a New York stockbroker and an Akron physician. Okay, real quick about that. That's being generous. The New York stockbroker was a hustler, a flim-flam man, a speculator. Bill wrote this about himself. Yes, that was Bill Wilson. And the Akron physician was our local homeboy hero, Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob was a proctologist. Now, all you new people, go to your sponsor or Google what a procto is. And I'm just glad to tell you that I'm glad Dr. Bob wasn't working on my procto when he was drinking. So there's a lot of folklore that came from Akron about him. That's, by the way, your deer ear or, you know, whatever. And one of the famous things that was said about Dr. Bob, he knew every ass in Akron, whether from practice or in AA. And I'm here to tell you that that was probably true. And that saying, you bet your ass, that came out of Akron, because when you went to see Dr. Bob, you were betting whether he was drunk or sober, and you were betting your ass, too. And you could go on and on about that. Can you imagine when he came home to Ann and said, you wouldn't believe the ass that came into my office today. So, I mean, I could go on for that. So anyhow, that's the kind of doctor he was. We'll have a little bit of fun. All right, now, come on, y'all. Here's a key idea coming up. It says 6 months earlier, the broker had been relieved by his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience following a meeting with an alcoholic friend. You might want to get your pen and pencil out. Here we have craving and obsession. Just like the fellowship in the program, I cannot go any further unless I know what it is. And there is a difference. An obsession is a craving is a physical thing, not a mental thing. In Alcoholics Anonymous, this book, our program, when he uses the word program, when he's using the word craving, it's referring to a phenomena, a physical craving, and an allergy of the body, and never, ever referring to the mind. In the fellowship, the program that you have there, you will people say, I was a year and I was craving a drink. No, you weren't. You may be obsessing a drink, but you weren't craving a drink. People were saying, I was craving a drink at 10 years. Not according to Alcoholics Anonymous, not according to the program. I can't recover from something unless I know what I got. I don't have a mental craving. I have a mental obsession. two totally, totally different things. And we're going to, like I said, we're going to go ahead and you want to write this down because next week is what basically the whole chapter is in the foundation of recovery. Step one, this powerless condition to deal with these two ideas besides the spiritual malady. What is a craving? It is a physical allergy. It's a physical craving. And here's what it is. Every time we drink, if you're alcoholic, this is, the body demands more of the same, physically, not mentally. So it's so strong, we can't stop no matter what. I got to understand that. I got to have that to be alcoholic. Because once I start drinking, my willpower, my fear, my self-knowledge, all that crap that we say to use to keep from drinking, it don't come into play. I cannot not stop. I go on until it's over. Is that a day? Is it a week? Is it a month? Is it a year? Basically, mine was 17 years. Okay? I don't know how long yours was. That's a physical thing. I need to know what a craving is. Now, what is the obsession that he just talked about? That's why we have to stop and get this. I thought I knew what an obsession is, but once again, wrong. Here's what an obsession is. It's an idea that overrides all ideas to the contrary. That's why when I say I'm done drinking and I get willpower, I use bad experiences, I use divorces, I use health problems, I use all the losses, all the headache and the heartache and whatever, that's all fine in Jim Danny, but guess what? I've got an obsession that's going to override all that. I won't remember what alcohol did to me. I'll remember what it did for me. That's why I'm powerless over alcohol. That's why I can't think to drink through. It don't matter what I lost. It don't matter what I'm going to lose. It don't matter any of that. It ain't going to come to my mind. So it doesn't matter how badly you want to stop or need to stop. From time to time, your mental obsession will tell you it's okay to drink. So therefore, this is why I am powerless over alcohol. And hopefully you are too. I can't safely drink because of the body. Once I take a drink, the physical craving starts and I'm off and running and I can't stop. It don't matter what I do, don't do, whatever. It's over when alcohol says it's over. And I can't stay sober or alcohol-free because of my mind, the mental obsession. Then, I have developed what he just talked about in the foreword to that first edition. I have developed that hopeless condition of the mind and body known as alcoholism. It says on the first foreword we just got on Roman numeral 3, a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I got to understand that. I got to know what it is because I can't treat it until I get it, understand it, accept it. And what I just described by trying to put a plug in the jug and sit in an AA meeting isn't going to treat that. I will drink again. That's what the first step doesn't say I can drink. The first step says I will drink. It's not a matter of when, or it's not a matter of will I drink again. It's a matter of when. That's the unmanageability. Everything that I muster up ain't going to keep me from drinking. And that's why it's great, the fellowship. I love it. And guess what? You're as powerless as I am over alcohol. Guess what? You can't help me. I can't help you. Only God could and would if he were sought. I've placed myself beyond human aid. But I need to know, that's why he said he was relieved by his drinking session by what? By a sudden spiritual experience. He didn't say by not drinking, going to meetings. He didn't say by going to, you know, calling your sponsor every day, getting two home groups and all that stuff that we're saying. I'm not saying that's bad, but that doesn't produce a spiritual experience. It's a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, the program. So anyhow, the spiritual experience. By the way, that's one of the key ideas in here, and it was so important that they added an appendix called Appendix 2, and that's real powerful, and I've got to understand that too, because that's vital in this thing called recovery from alcoholism. So anyhow, it says, it goes on, I've been in contact with the Oxford groups of that day. He had been greatly helped by the late Dr. William Duncan Silkworth. By the way, that's the guy who wrote the doctor's opinion next week. We'll be back. It says, a New York specialist who is now accounted no less than a medical saint by AA members and whose story is on the early pages of our society, fellowship, not program, okay, appears in the next pages. From this doctor, the broker learned the grave nature of alcoholism. That's what I just got done giving you, the grave nature. I am condemned to drink because of the mental obsession. I am condemned to die because of the physical allergy, and there's not a damn thing I could do about it. And I had to bring that out because if not, I would blow right through this and I wouldn't get what he was talking about. Okay, that's alcoholism. It says, though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford groups, he was convinced of the need of moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution of those harm, helpfulness to others, and the necessity. We were just talking about something that's a fancy word for must or have to, necessity, okay? Listen, of belief in and dependence upon. I can believe in a lot of things, but I ain't dependent on it. But it says belief in and dependence on. Now, real quickly, if we can, I cannot go on any further unless I know what he was talking about with the Oxford group and what these tenets were. An Oxford group, obviously, was a 12th century or a first century Christianity movement. That's where Dr. Bob was a member 2.5 years, trying to get over his drinking, couldn't do it. Bill was in 6 months after Abby came to him, and this is our history. The Oxford group was a Christian fellowship, and it was founded by a guy named Buckman. Here's what they had. They were called the 5 C's. We were talking about the tenets. They were confidence, confession, conviction. That ain't going to the penitentiary, by the way. Conversion and continuance. And then they had something else called the 4 absolutes. Absolute honesty, absolute purity, absolute unselfishness, and absolute love. Now, if you're a real alcoholic, that will make you thirsty when you hear those things. So you can see why we had to split, if you will, from the Oxford group, and there were a lot of different reasons. Time doesn't permit. It's an absolutely fascinating story. Do yourself a favor, and when time permits, get into the story of that. But from those, you can see that he talked about the need for moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution of those harmed, helpfulness to others, necessity and belief and dependence on God. They had an early 6-step program before we have our 12 steps. If you are, depends what edition you're reading, if you are in the 3rd edition, it is on page 292. If you are in the 4th edition, go to 263. Please go to that so you can see what he just got done saying. So you can see where we went from the absolutes, the 5 C's. They had a thing called soul surgery. Stay with me on that week of how it works. We go into much more detail. But please go to that and see what the 6-step program was. 292 in the 3rd edition, and I believe 263 in the 4th. I hope that is correct information. I know it is. Okay, and it says, these steps were, complete deflation. Damn him. If deflation isn't bad enough, now it's complete. Guess what? That's everything. All in. Remember last year's the team? All in. Complete deflation. Number 2, dependence and guidance from a higher power, capital H, capital P, that's God. Number 3, moral inventory, and don't let your mind assign what that is, because it's probably nowhere near what a moral inventory really is. Number 4, confession. I didn't like that, because that's what the police always tried to get out of me. I ain't saying that. Yeah, so, no. So he changed it, you can see later on. This was not my favorite either, too. Restitution. That's what the fines were after the police, all that. So, yeah. And then number 6, continued work with other alcoholics. Boy, those 6 would be a lot easier than those 12. But Bill knew later on. So stick with us. We'll give you the history, how we went that. Absolutely fascinating. But I need to know where we came from, to know where I'm at, to know where I'm going. It's not an option. I need to know this stuff. And we are going to know it by the time we're done. So now he says this. Prior to his journey to Akron, Ohio, the broker worked hard with many other alcoholics. 72 other alcoholics Bill worked with till he got to Dr. Bob. How many of us, brand new, sober, 6 months, would go to 72 and then go to 73? I'd probably be in the bar myself, but anyhow, it says... Worked hard with many alcoholics on the theory that only an alcoholic could help another alcoholic, but he succeeded only keeping himself sober. The broker had gone to Akron on a business venture which had collapsed, leaving him greatly feared that he might start drinking again. The reason that Bill came to Akron, it was the proxy fight. It was down in L.A., lower Akron down there. Okay? It was a company, NRM, National Rubber Machine. Still in business down there, but yeah. So, thank God that's how Bill Wilson came to the great city of Akron, Ohio. So anyhow, listen to what he said. The broker had gone to Akron, business venture would collapse, leaving him greatly in the fear that he might start drinking again. He suddenly realized in order to save himself, not Dr. Bob, to save himself, he must, not should, not could, not ought to, he must carry the message to another alcoholic. That alcoholic turned out to be the Akron physician, Dr. Bob. That theory went into reality Mother's Day weekend, because Bill Wilson stayed sober by doing that. We know Dr. Bob drank again and then came back in June 10th, 1935, and founding of Alcoholics Anonymous. The physician had repeatedly tried spiritual means. Uh-oh. That's the premise of things to come, in the augury, the omen, the indication of what Alcoholics Anonymous is, okay? Spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but failed. We're going to save you a little bit of time. Dilemma. Di means two. Lemma means an answer, and neither of them are too favorable. There's a lot of dilemmas when I'm drinking. There's a lot of dilemmas in recovery. I'll give you a dilemma when I was drinking. If I don't drink, I can't live. If I drink, I'm going to die. Everybody knows that dilemma. There's a lot of dilemmas in here, too. I'll let you fill in the blanks. There's dilemmas every day. Sometimes the answers aren't too pleasurable. In fact, you know what? A lot of times doing God's will, can I say it? It's a pain in the ass. Okay, I did say that. Okay, I'm hiding from him under the podium. He said it over there. I didn't say that. So anyhow, yeah, that was Chris that said that. Okay, so anyhow, to resolve his alcoholic dilemma. But when the broker gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, what he gave him, and is this honors of God, a stockbroker gave a doctor the medical information about alcoholism. He gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of the powerless condition, condemned to drink because of the obsession, condemned to die because of the allergy. A stockbroker gave it to the doctor. It don't work that way. Listen what happens when he got it. Because Dr. Bob didn't know what he was solving. He thought he was a loser. He thought he was a moral degenerate. He thought he was a freak. He thought all the things that they think about alcoholics, they're probably all true, but he didn't know he had that body thing. He couldn't solve it because he didn't know. He didn't know he had that mental obsession. When Bill came in, he gave him what the problem is. He gave him the foundation of recovery, step one, from Dr. Silkworth. So listen what happens, okay? And it says, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy. So guess what? The problem is alcoholism. The remedy is spirituality. Okay, so we're in the foreword of the second edition, and we're not guessing what we're doing here. Okay, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. For his malady, with a willingness he'd never been mustered before, he sobered never to drink again to the moment of his death, in 1950, that was November 16th, by the way, that's when Dr. Bob died. This seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect no other alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous, and then W word that ends with a K, work. Okay, that's a cuss word for most of us. Strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital. Uh-oh, that's a fancy word for must, have to. To permanent recovery. We're not talking about physical sobriety. We're talking permanent recovery. Now, I thought I knew what the word vital was, and this is why I keep going with it, and time won't permit. Obviously, we can't break all the word down, but here's how important that word is. Vital. Absolute, necessary, or important, essential. Essential. The essence. Critical. That means life and death. Crucial. Indispensable, all important, imperative, mandatory, requisite, urging, pressing, burning, compelling, high priority, I like this one, life and death of the most importance, utmost importance. Vital, strenuous work, one alcoholic with another. I got it. Okay, so let's see what happens. Hence, the two men set to work frantically upon alcoholics arriving at the ward of the Akron City Hospital. Dr. Bob worked down there, and he called down to the admitting nurse and said, hey, this guy from New York's got a treatment for alcoholism. You got any alcoholics down there? And the nurse says, oh, we got a real corker down here. He just got done slapping a nurse, and she's got two black eyes, and this guy's been down here I don't know how many times, and he's a great guy when he's sober, but when he's drunk, he's really bad, and we got him strapped down in bed, and that wasn't for fun and frolic. And they said, Dr. Bob, before you come down and talk to this guy, have you tried it on yourself? And he was insulted. He thought nobody knew that he was an alcoholic, but she knew right away. Anyhow, it says, their very first case, and that is Bill Dotson, the man on the bed, the famous thing that we see. Dr. Bob Bill, and the man on the bed is Bill Dotson. He's AA number 3, and yes, his story's in this book, too. I implore you to read that story, too, along with Dr. Bob's after we're done with this. Anyhow, it said he became AA number 3, never had another drink. This work continued in Akron in the summer of 35. There were many failures, and there was an occasionally heartening success. They didn't know what they were doing. They're trying all kinds of things. When the broker returned to New York in the fall of 1935, the first AA group had actually been formed. No one realized it at that time. By late 1937, the number of members having substantial sobriety time, 2 years. Everybody sneezes at 2 years now. They said substantial sobriety time. By the way, they counted heads. Said Joe is, this guy, Bill is, and whatever. And much to their amazement, they had 40 people that were sober from the deal. And the light bulb went off and said, oh, my God, we really have something. 2 years to get 40 people. Now, the things that we take for granted. We're spoiled rotten, aren't we? Spoiled children with an inheritance and a legacy that people died for that we have. And some of us will dare spit on it on a good day. Yeah, the respect and the dignity of the ones that gave their very hearts and souls and their sons and daughters and we don't know the sacrifices they made to give us what we got today. End of editorials. Don't believe it, Chris. Anyhow. Okay, it says, behind them was sufficient to convince the membership had entered new light and entered the dark world of the alcoholic. Okay, now, it says a second small group had taken shape in New York. And besides, there were scattered alcoholics who picked up the basic ideas. We talked about that, the tenets, the absolutes, and the six-step program that we're talking about. In Akron, New York, we're trying to form AA groups in other cities. That happened to be in Cleveland that they were going. Now, here's where fate entered, right in this city. Group Conscience, 676 Palisades. It was the Williams home. They used to meet in the Oxford group. They had a meeting. 18 people were there. And they decided the fate of Alcoholics Anonymous, Group Conscience. They came up with three things that they were going to do. They were going to have a chain of hospitals go around the world. Not grandiose thinking, right? They were all broke or whatever. Because alcoholics couldn't get in hospital. They also were going to have worldwide missionaries to go around the world and carry the message. Dr. Bob was going to do the hospitals. Bill was going to be the head of the missionaries. And the third thing they decided that night was to write a book. Believe it or not, there was no TV and www. And face this and all that stuff. There wasn't. Books were a big deal back then. That's how people read and whatever. Oxford Group were writing a lot of books. Don't forget, they were still in the Oxford Group. But the real reason that they wrote this down, the message was starting to get garbled already, what we were talking about. Thank God. Thank Almighty God that they did this. Because guess what? Well, we wouldn't be here. We would not be here. Needless to say, the first two ideas got kicked to the curb, and this thing, this book, oh, we know that story. It was an invisible or slender thread away from going totally broke, and same thing with Alcoholics Anonymous. We are here by one thing and one thing only. It's called grace. That's how this thing happened. But it's absolutely fascinating. If you go down on Palisades, it's a beautiful house. They're used to people taking pictures. Somebody told me that an AA bought it. I don't know if it was for sale or whatever, but it would be pretty cool if you could get in there. Anyhow, it says it was now time for the struggling groups to place their message and unique experience, the word, before the world, the determination bore the fruit in the spring of 1939. We know that, April 10th, 1939, when the book came out. By the publication of this volume, the membership then had reached about 100 men and women. We talked about that. There was 94, three groups. The fledgling society, and a fledgling is a young bird ready to fly, young or inexperienced. Wasn't Bill a master of the English language? Man, he really know what to do. The fledgling society, which had been nameless, it was the drunk squad of the Oxford group. Then they came up with its name called Alcoholics Anonymous. And through a chain of events, we, the fellowship, took the name of the book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And it said, and now began to be called Alcoholics Anonymous from the title of its book. They had a lot of different names for the book. In fact, I'm going to do that real quick, if we can. And some of these names of this book were The Way Out. But they went to the Library of Congress and found out there were 12 others, and they didn't want to be unlucky number 13, so they didn't do that. Another one was Comes the Dawn. That was a pretty catchy name, but they turned that down. One of them was going to be 100 men. Then a woman joined and ruined the whole damn thing. Thanks, her. Yeah. True story. Bill's ego got in the way. He wanted a Bill W. movement. They kicked that to the curb real quick. But anyhow, we were alcoholics and wanted to remain anonymous, so we thought anonymous alcoholics would be good. And as folklore goes, a dyslexic, wet brain, borderline wet brain alcoholic, switched it backwards. Instead of anonymous alcoholics, he said Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, my God, that's perfect. And that's how we got it today. Once again, God do what he do, when he do, how he do, and you ain't going to stop it. So that's a little bit of history. So it goes on to say, the flying blob period ended when AA entered a new phase of its pioneering time. With the appearance of the new book, a great deal began to happen. Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick, the noted clergyman, reviewed with approval. In the fall of 1939, Fulton Osler, the editor of Liberty, printed a piece in the magazine called Alcoholics of God that brought a rush of 800 frantic inquiries in the little New York office, which meanwhile had been established. Each inquiry was painstakingly answered. Pamphlets and books were sent out. Businessmen traveling out of existing groups were referred to the prospective newcomers. New groups started up after they did the deal, after they read the book, not before. That would be a novel concept. You couldn't start an AA meeting until you read the book. You might have to take a quiz for it, huh? Okay. Uh-oh. Anyhow, it says, new group started up as fun and astonishment. Everyone, A's message could be transmitted by the mail as word of mouth. By the end of 1939, it was estimated 800 alcoholics were on their way to recovery. So there was 100 groups in 1 year. Absolutely fascinating. Here's where we really turn the turning point coming up. It says, in spring of 1940, John D. Rockefeller gave a dinner to many of his friends, which invited AA members to tell their stories. News got out in this worldwide, world wires. Inquiries poured in again, and many people went to the big bookstores to get the book Alcoholics Anonymous. By March of 41, the membership had shot up to 2,000. They wanted to borrow millions or get grants or gifts from Rockefeller to do their hospitals and all their grand plans. And the richest man in the world said, I'm strangely moved by all this, but money would spoil this. From the richest man, he gave us two of the greatest gifts in the world. Our oath to poverty, thank God, because it would have ruined Alcoholics Anonymous. But more importantly than our oath to poverty, he gave us his backing. And he was the who's who in the world at that time. And what Rockefeller said, it went, and all the people underneath, I'm talking about the Carnegie Mellons, the Sears, and all the other millionaires. When Rockefeller said Alcoholics Anonymous is good, believe me, the world knew Alcoholics Anonymous was good. So he gave us something more important than money could ever, ever give. And that's a good reputation and a good referral to Alcoholics Anonymous. Absolutely changed the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyhow, it goes on to say, then Jack Alexander wrote a feature article in Saturday Evening Post, placed such a compelling picture of the story for the general public, the alcoholics in need of help really deluged us. By the close of 1941, AA numbered 8,000 members. The mushrooming process was in full swing. AA had become a national institution. Such a few paragraphs, if you get a chance to read our history, it's absolutely fascinating. Our society, not the program, then entered a fearsome and exciting adolescent period. And as you can see here, we are going to see what happened. The test that it faced was this. Could these large number of erstwhile erratic, not erotic, I said a lot of people, alcoholics successfully meet and work together? What is erstwhile? It's first or former. Once again, I need a dictionary to even do anything in this book. Okay? And it says, could meet or work together? That's a million-dollar question. Would there be quarrels or membership, leadership, and money? Oh, hell yes. Okay. Would there be strivings for power and prestige? You bet. Would there be schisms, which would split AA apart? A schism is a split because of different opinion or doctrine. Need to have a Webster's to read and understand this book. Okay. So you can see what he's getting ready to hear. We're getting ready to give us a little history lesson on the traditions real quick. And it goes like this. Soon AA was beset on these very problems on every side and in every group. Don't you just love them? That word every changes everything. Not some groups, not most groups, not a lot of them. Everyone. In fact, they did a real simple poll. A lot of groups had rules and regulations for members. And they assembled them all. And much to the New York's office surprise, if all the rules of all the groups would have been enforced at one time, Dr. Bob and Bill couldn't have been members of AA. That's how we got that thing so screwy from the get-go. 9/10 of the original members of Alcoholics Anonymous would not have qualified for membership if we would have let all the rules and regulations come in. Isn't it absolutely amazing how we screwed that up from the get-go? It says, but out of this frightening and first disrupting experience, conviction grew that AAs had, not should, not could, not ought to, had to hang together or die separately. That's power there. I need you. You need me. It's a matter of life and death. Oh, that's right. That word vital. We talked about that. This is what he says, y'all. Come on. We had, not should, could, ought to, unify our fellowship or pass off the scene. You tell me how important unity is. Okay. And it says, as soon as we discovered the principles, which are the 12 steps, by which an individual could live. We're not talking about not drinking. We're talking about living. We had, not should, could, ought to, involve principles, which are the traditions, by which AA groups and AA as a whole could survive and function effectively. He just got done telling us the 12 steps is a matter of life and death for you and I individually. He just got done saying the 12 traditions are a matter of life and death for us as a group and as a whole. Don't discount the traditions. That's why it's the second leg of the triangle or the recovery. Anyhow, and it says, it was thought that no alcoholic man or woman could be excluded from our society, tradition 3. That our leaders might serve but never govern, tradition 2. That each group was to be autonomous, tradition 4. That there would be no professional class of therapy, tradition 8. That there were no dues or fees or expenses were met by voluntary contributions, tradition 7. There was to be the least possible organization even in our service centers, tradition 9. Our public relations were based on attraction rather than promotion, tradition 11. It was decided that all members ought to be anonymous at the level of press, radio, TV, and films, tradition 11. And in no circumstances should we give endorsements, make alliances, or enter public controversy, tradition 10. So don't tell me in this book we're just talking about the 12 steps. We're talking about our very survival as a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, this was the substance of AA's 12 traditions, which are stated in full on page 564. I believe if you're in the fourth edition, that's on page 561, okay, of this book. Though none of these principles had the force of rules or laws, they become widely accepted in 1950, and they're confirmed at our first international conference held in Cleveland, Ohio. Absolutely fascinating. 2,000 alcoholics. Dr. Bob was dying. He gave his blessing on that. He also gave blessing on the service conference later on. And do you believe it? All 2,000 alcoholics, every one of them, said yes to that. There wasn't a dissenting vote. That's called unanimity. Not a majority, unanimity. Now, why Can we get 2,000 alcoholics in 1950 to agree on that? Thank God, because it ensured our future. But I've been at home group meetings where you can't get two people to agree on nothing. Oh, I think we talked about that. We're talking about being spoiled, rotten little kids wanting our way, not thinking what's best for the group, not thinking what's best for Alcoholics Anonymous. I, me, instead of we, us, and ours. You better believe it. You better believe it. Okay. Anyhow, it says, today, the remarkable unity of AA is one of the greatest assets our society has. Is that true 2017? Or was it just in 1955? I'll let you guys do it. Anyhow, it says, while the internal difficulties of our adolescence period was being ironed out, public acceptance of AA grew leaps and bounds. Why did it grow? For these two principal reasons. By the way, its principal is P-A-L, that means main. P-L-E is ideas, or when he says principles in this book, it's either with the steps or the traditions. The two principal reasons, the large number of recoveries and reunited homes. Is that what's going on in AA? Large number of recoveries and reunited homes. Okay, listen to what it says. These made impressions everywhere. Not some places, not most, not a lot, everywhere. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25 sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder who stayed on AA showed improvement. Who's got one of them smartphones? What's 50 and 25? Recovery rate from 1939 to 1955 was 75%. Today, it's not even in double digits. It's not 50, it's not 60, it's not 40, it's not 30, it's not 20, it's not 10, it's not 19. Latest statistic is not even 5%. Now, it's pretty simple to me. There's three reasons. Number one, the program that we're giving them isn't the program in the book. They're not recovering. Okay? I give you that. Number two, he says, who really tried? Maybe a lot of us are coming in, we're not really trying. Now I'll give you another reason, too. When this was written, there were 10 old-timers for every newcomer. Now that ratio is the other way around. We've got one old-timer, whatever you want to call that, or somebody who's doing the deal, knows the deal, and you got 10 or 20 newcomers coming in. That's going to have it, those three reasons. But my charge to you is what message, what program is your home group given? Is it the program that's in this book? Or is it the program in the fellowship that we were just talking about? My God, look at the difference between it. It's scary. It's startling. I don't know if we'll ever get back to 75. And bear with me. I've got another statistic proving that. And I found on that by mistake. And bear with me. And obviously we'll have that, I believe, next week. So it goes on. It says, of the thousands who came to a few AA meetings, the fellowship, and the first decided they didn't want the program. God, aren't we glad that we got that straightened out? Okay? But great numbers of these, about 2 out of 3, began to return as time passed. Okay, and it said another reason for wide acceptance of A was administration, which is service, help, or act as an agent, of friends in medicine, religion, press, together were innumerable others, who became able and persistent advocates. Without such support, A could have made only the slowest progress. Some of the recommendations of early A medical and religious friends will be found further on this book. Better give the credit where the credit's due when we find out everything in this book comes from non-alcoholics. Not some, not most, not a lot, everything. It goes on to say, he forgot a tradition here, number 5, Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religious organization. Neither does AA take any particular medical point of view, though we cooperate widely with men of medicine as well as men of religion. In other words, let's be friendly with our friends. Okay. Now, it goes on to say, alcohol being no respecter of persons, we are an accurate cross-section of America and distant lands. The same demographic evening up process is now going on. By personal religious affiliation, we include Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Hindus, sprinkling of Muslim, Buddhists. More than 15% of us are women. That obviously has changed. At present, our membership is increasing at the rate of about 7% a year. That has changed so far. Upon the total problem of several million actual or potential alcoholics in the world, we have only made a scratch. In all probability, we shall never be able to touch more than a fair fraction of the alcohol problem and all of its ramifications. Upon therapy for the alcoholic himself, we surely have no monopoly. God, I love how humble he is. Okay? Yet, it's our great hope for all those who have yet found no answer. Remember goal number two, the answer or the solution? May begin to find one of these pages of this book and will presently join us on the high road to a new freedom. Yes. New means you never had it before. Real quick, if we can. He talks about freedom five times. Roman numeral 21, page 62, 83, 87, 160. We're talking about freedom, not about relief. He talks about being free eight times. Page 26, 28, 66, 75, 120, 133, 144, 158. Yes, I want to be free, and yes, I want to have freedom. Now it goes on real quick here to the forward to the third edition. We'll do the fourth, and we shall be done. Forward to the third edition. By the March of 1976, when this edition went to the printer, total worldwide membership of Alcoholics Anonymous was conservatively estimated at more than 1 million, with almost 28,000 meeting in over 90 countries. Survey of the groups of the United States and Canada indicate that AA is reaching out not only to more and more people, but to a wider and wider range. Women now make up more than one-fourth of the membership. Among newer members, the proportion is nearly one-third. 7% of the AAs are less than 30 years of age. Among them, many in their teens, asterisk C at the bottom. Depends what book you're reading. The basic principles, which are the steps of the AA program, appears hold good for individuals with many different lifestyles. Just as the program, which is 12 steps, has brought recovery to those of many different nationalities, the 12 steps that summarize the program. Got it? Program, fellowship, two totally different things. I think we got it. They may call, pardon this butchery, La Doce Pasos in one country, La Doce Estapes in another, but they trace exactly, not close, not sort, or not in a general way, the same path. Rarely have we seen a person fail us through or follow our path. What is our path? It's the 12 steps. Okay? To recovery! We're not talking about putting the plug in the jug. We're talking about recovery. That was blazed by the earliest members of Alcoholics Anonymous. In spite of the great increase in the size of the span of the fellowship, not the program, at its core remains simple and personal. Each day, where is she? She's in here. Each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope. Now, it's kind of odd. He used the word work seven times, work twice, working once, and works twice for 12 times. We will do the forward to the fourth, and then we will be done with one last thought, and it's pretty thought-provoking it will be when I give you these numbers. Forward to the fourth edition. This fourth edition of Alcoholics Anonymous came off the press in November 2001, the start of a new millennium. Since the third edition was published in 1976, worldwide membership of AA had just about doubled to an estimated 2 million or more, with nearly 100,800 groups meeting approximately 150 countries across the world. Literature, the program, this book, has played a major role in AA's growth, with a striking phenomenon of the past quarter century has been an explosion of the translations of our basic literature, this book, into many languages and dialects. In country after country where the AA seed was planted, it has taken root slowly at first, then growing by leaps and bounds when literature, I'm so glad they kept this part of it in, you'll see what they did change though, has become available. Currently, Alcoholics Anonymous, this book, has been translated into 43 languages. As the message of recovery, not putting the plug in the jug or not physical sobriety, we're talking recovery, has reached large numbers of people, it has also touched the lives vastly greater of suffering alcoholics, period. When the phrase, we are people who would not normally mix, page 17 of this book, was written in 1939, it referred to a fellowship, not the program, composed largely of men and a few women, with quite similar social, ethic, and economic backgrounds. Like so much of AA's basic text, this book, those words have proved far to be more visionary than the founding members could have ever imagined. The stories added to this edition represent a membership And we're talking about the fellowship. That's why they have different editions for the stories to reach the current membership, whose characteristics of age, gender, race, and culture has widened and deepened to encompass virtually everyone the first 100 members could have hoped to. While our literature, not the fellowship, has preserved the integrity of the AA message, not my message, this book is the message, the 12 steps. That's the program that we want in Alcoholics Anonymous, not the fellowship program. It goes on to say, sweeping changes in our society as a whole are reflected in new custom practices within the fellowship, not the program. Taking advantage of technological advances, for example. Now, if you have a fourth edition and it's not one of the beginning ones, it's going to be changed. And here's why. So if it changes in your book, here's what happened with it. It says, for example, AA members with computers can participate in meetings online, sharing with fellow alcoholics across the country or around the world. Listen to what it said. Fundamentally, though, the difference between an electronic meeting and the home group on the corner is only one of format. Where's that button? Bullshit! And I wrote him and I called him and I talked to him and I said, how dare you say that? I cannot wipe the puke off of a computer screen. I can't hold a man shaking hand who just had his wife and his kids taken from him. I can't pick up a newcomer and have him sit in my car shaking apart on a computer screen. Don't you dare tell me a meeting on the computer is fundamentally the same as a home group. It is not the same. And I'm not discrediting that. I get it with the work and the shut-ins and the physical thing and all that, but don't you dare tell me that. I can't kiss you on your anniversary on the computer screen. So don't tell me it's the same. It's not. F to F. Face to face, y'all. Come on. And I think they have changed it. Yeah, I get foaming at the mouth about that. I do. So anyhow, it goes on to say, in any meeting, anywhere, AAs share experience, strength, and hope with each other in order to stay sober and help other alcoholics. Modem to modem or face to face, AA speak the language of the heart in all its power and simplicity. Obviously, sixth time he mentions how important the text was, literature saved it. Now, last thought for the night, and thank you again for the extra 10 minutes. Remember the 75%. Remember the 75% and how the serenity prayer went from we, us, our, to me, my, and I. Take these numbers and do with them as you see fit. But this explains why we've gone from 75 to 5%. Here it is. The foreword to the first edition, he uses the word we 18 times. 1939, look how short that foreword was. The second foreword written in 1935, he used the word we 10 times. Look how many more pages it was. In 1976, the foreword to the third edition, you know how many times he used the word we? Zero. How many times they used the word we in the fourth? Zero. There's a quote one out of the on page 17. Why have we gone from 18 to 10 to 0 to 0? I'll tell you why. Because the illness, the sickness, the malady of alcoholism, the me, the my, the I is back and it's alive and well. And I suppose that's why we in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous aren't talking about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what we're getting. Food for thought, too, and then we'll be done. There is not a single I, me, or my in the 12 steps or 12 traditions. There's 15 we, us, or ours in the 12 steps. I get it. There's 11 we, us, or ours in the 12 traditions short form. There's 36 we, us, or ours in the long form of our traditions. Absolutely fascinating. What does that mean? I'll let you guys draw your own conclusions. And I said it the first week, and I will say it again. With that same vein, when we close up, which we are, thank God, right? I hear a collective sigh. When we close with the Lord's Prayer, what is the first word? It's our Father, not my Father. How about if we close with the Lord's Prayer? Please come back for the doctor's opinion. And also, we have been starting with a prayer called the Set-Aside Prayer. And I was given an alternate version of this. I know there's a lot of them, and this one is slightly different, but it's absolutely amazing how just a word or two can change it. And the set-aside prayer, what we are doing is asking God to open our minds, our hearts, our souls, if you will, because what I know can be a liability and not an asset. What I think I know can keep me from what I need to know, and what I think I know can be dangerous to myself. So this set-aside prayer can be very specific, and I'll give you this version here and listen to the difference if you can. And it goes like this: God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, my disease, these steps, and especially you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my disease, these steps, and especially you. Better be careful when you pray that one. I guarantee you. He might, the book talks about it later, being beat into a state of reasonableness. I say beat into a state of sponsorship, but that's depends how you look at it. So we've taken something from this book as our goal or our mission, and it really will come alive tonight what the good doctor tells us what we need. And it goes as follows: AA's 12 steps, a group of principles spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life can expel the obsession and drink and enable the sufferer to be happily and usefully whole. We call that a recovered alcoholic, or emotional sobriety, spiritual sobriety, real deal. I call it by the book sobriety, if you will. And that's what this book is going to give us, the directions, the instructions. We talked about the precise, exact, clear cut, specific, or the recipe, if you will, to become a recovered alcoholic. So we always start with the usual. That would be me, two phone numbers, home and the cell. Please don't hesitate. Now, the ones that weren't here, we've gone at great length to talk about the goals and the problem solving, and obviously identify what the problem is, what the solution, the plan of action, at great length. And you will see how important it was that you were here, because it's going to come alive tonight in the doctor's opinion. And also, we went at great length from the fellowship and the program, and there again, there will be a great divide tonight in that. Talked about sober versus recovery, and this is one thing that we've talked about kind of in a general way, the steps. And you will see how that all comes alive tonight. So we always like to read something that has what to do with what we're talking about tonight, and it's called Moral Responsibility. And Bill did this in a talk in 1960, and it goes as this: some strongly object to the AA position that alcoholism is an illness. This concept, they feel, removes moral responsibility from alcoholics. As well as any AA knows, this is far from true. We do not use the concept of our sickness to absolve our members from responsibility. On the contrary, we use the fact of fatal illness to clamp the heaviest kind of... Well, I hate when that happens. Okay, I thought somebody didn't like what I was reading there. Okay. Everybody on the floor. Okay, yes, so the heaviest kind of moral obligation onto the sufferer, the obligation to use AA's 12 steps to get well. In the early days of his drinking, the alcoholic is often guilty of irresponsibility, but once the time of compulsive drinking has arrived, he can't very well be held fully accountable for his conduct. He then has an obsession that condemns him to drink, and the body sensitivity to alcohol that guarantees his final madness and death. But when he is made aware of this condition, which we will be tonight when we leave, he is under the pressure to accept AA's program of moral regeneration. Here, I thought all I had to do was put the plug in the jug and go to an AA meeting. Now I'm going to be moral regenerized. Oh, that is great. Okay. That's a scary thought, isn't it? So, where were we? Oh, yes, that's right. That's where we were. Last time we talked about in the foreword to the second edition with the recovery rate, of being 75%, and we went at great length to talk about the reasons why that could be and probably is the fellowship program Sober Recovery. And I said I would have another statistic to back this up. This happens to be out of the first edition, 16th printing of our big book, August 1954. They had something in the back that were called appendixes. I wish they would have them in there today. This is priceless. Listen to what he wrote. And the title of it is We Are Now Thousands. Listen to what it says. When this book appeared in April 1939, and by the way, it's April the 10th, there were approximately 100 members. So he's getting honest. Remember, there wasn't 100. There was, what, 96, we said? Okay. Two-thirds of them were at Akron, Ohio, or nearby communities in the northern part of that state. That would be Cleveland, by the way. He goes on to say, it has been satisfactorily demonstrated that at least 2 out of 3 alcoholics who wish to get well, that's recover, not sober, okay, could apparently do so, notwithstanding the fact their chances of recovery, not just sobriety, upon any other medical or spiritual basis have been almost nil, a small percentage at best. Who's got one of the small smartphones? That's 66%. So it has been documented, he said, 75, 50 at once, 25% later. In this appendix in the first edition, 16th printing, he backed that up with 66%. We've established, obviously, today our rate would not even be 5%, and I just wanted to bring that information up to you. He goes on to say a few pages later about this Cleveland, Ohio. He says, Cleveland, Ohio is an interesting example. In the fall of 1939, approximately 25 Cleveland alcoholics were attending meetings with the already large group at Akron, Ohio. The Cleveland Plain Dealer ran a series of articles on AA featuring them on the editorial page. A rapid and successful growth ensued. This community has many active AA, many active groups totaling hundreds of alcoholic men and women. This activity includes perhaps thousands of additional individuals, families, employers, and friends who say they've been vitally touched and benefited. Suppose several thousand alcoholics, most of them able and energetic men and women, coming from all walks of life, eventually recover. Surely the effect on this city would be potent. He goes on to say, there is another aspect of our activity which has been often overlooked. Though no accurate census has been taken, it is probable that 90% of active AA members are now employed. Most of them reestablish themselves economically with no other help than we give each other. We believe we have demonstrated that when an individual commences to think straight and elects a sound spiritual basis for life, he will presently find a way to maintain himself. This spiritual principle, which looks like to many people like a threadbare rationalization, seems to be practically proven by our employment record. The simple arithmetic of the situation tells the stories. He goes on to say, one might elaborate for pages upon what has taken place in the past few years, stories of spectacular recoveries, of intense spiritual experiences, of happy social contacts, of regained health, of hundreds who have returned to their churches, of families reunited, of seemingly impossible differences composed, of renewed business success. Such narratives might be set down by the scores. Nor should we fail to mention other hundreds who have quietly stopped drinking and have resumed normal life. We could also tell heartbreaking failures of seeing those whom have formed a great attachment and continued to disintegrate before our eyes, such as the warp and the woof of AA everywhere. Absolutely fascinating that was written then, in the compelling picture of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that what we have in Alcoholics Anonymous of 2017? Kind of reminds me of the story, and this is a true story. Billy Graham, I don't know if you guys know that, this is not an outside issue. He went around the country, was doing revivals and doing all kinds of stuff. It so happened he was doing one where there was a big AA convention, and Billy Graham was up there, and he was healing all kinds of people. People would come up with crutches, and you'd say you're healed, and the guy would throw the crutches down and go away. And one would come up on the wheelchair and said you're healed. She would get up and walk away. Blind guy couldn't see. Touch him, the eyes were opened up. So anyhow, Billy, after the service, and these alcoholics were across the way, heard about this convention. So anyhow, they were riding up the elevator to go to their rooms. And the alcoholic goes to Billy Graham. He goes, whatever you do, don't touch me. I'm 100% disability. So I don't know what that means or not. So true story, true story. So, okay. All right, now that we've got the seriousness out of the way here. Yeah. Now that we've got the seriousness out of the way, I think what we'll do here is give a little bit of history before we get into the doctor's opinion. And I've taken the liberty, if you will, to hand out some terms. How about if we go ahead and do this? There are some words in this doctor's opinion that I must have a definition to understand what we're going, and not to stop where we're at. So we're going to go ahead and go over these definitions. And I normally used to write them on the board, but I put them on the paper, and it's absolutely vital, which is a matter of life and death, that I understand those. So why those are being passed out, obviously you want to show this Dr. Silkworth is, by the way, not alcoholic.